to you today for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is a locally made exploration into positive solutions to some of today's ecological challenges for all of us working to create a healthier future for our communities and for the world you live in.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Darnell. On this show, host Dave Mitchell will speak with his guest, Bernadette Demientev, Executive Director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee, a coalition of Gwich'in people who seek to preserve one of America's last great wilderness, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The Gwich'ins, or Gutchins, are First Nation people of Canada and an Alaska Native people. They live in the northwestern part of North America, mostly above the Arctic Circle. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is subject to the depredations of the fossil fuel industry. We at Equal Radio KC are glad to encourage awareness and protection of our world. We can create a sustainable present for a sustainable future. Please stay tuned for this great radio hour. But first, the environmental news for the week of January 25th, 2021. Democracy Now! Reports. President Biden signed 17 executive orders in his first official act from the Oval Office. Biden rejoined the Paris Climate Accord and canceled the Keystone XL pipeline, put a moratorium on oil and gas permits in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and ordered a review of Trump's actions undermining public health and the environment. New York Times reports a federal appeals court struck down the Trump administration's plan to relax restrictions on greenhouse gas emission from power plants, paving the way for President Biden to enact new and stronger restrictions on power plants. A new survey has found that a majority of voters registered as both Republican and Democrat support initiatives to fight climate change. Inside Climate News reports, some Republicans have launched a bid to block President Biden's executive order to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord and revoking the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline. The lawmakers, many from big energy producing states, plan to introduce two pieces of legislation that would give Congress a say in the decisions. CNN News reports President Biden's top lawyer at the EPA has asked the Justice Department to cease its defense of Trump-era environmental rules. Two chemical giant corporations have announced a massive $4 billion settlement over their environmental liabilities for forever chemicals, PFASs, which are toxic substances. KPR News. The Wichita, Kansas area have been plagued with a series of small earthquakes since Thanksgiving, and the Kansas Geological Survey says one of two earthquakes that rumbled early January was the largest in that series and also the 32nd strongest in Kansas data. Now our show.
Welcome to this week's edition of Echo Radio on KKFI 90.1 FM. Kansas City Community Radio, with this week's host, Dave Mitchell. Today, we'll be discussing the historical struggle to save the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge from the essentially permanent damage which would be caused by oil and gas drilling in one of America's last great wildernesses. The very Republican President Eisenhower designated the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in 1960, which includes significant portions of the land of the Gwich'in people and that of the porcupine caribou herd, whose lives have been intertwined for about 20,000 years. For decades, fossil fuel corporations and Republicans have advocated for drilling in this great American interests. And in the Trump administration, these interests finally achieved their goal of oil lease sales on the coastal plain, ironically on January 6th of this year. In 12-step groups, it is widely understood that continued repetition of self-destructive behavior while expecting different results is the very definition of insanity. The insanity of our times is the ongoing effort by fossil fuel corporations, whose only motive is profit, to endlessly extend their operations to all possible areas, no matter the environmental or social cost. These corporations are the most visible manifestation of a worldview that is blind, deaf, and dumb to the living web of life supporting humanity, as well as the realities of the human-induced sixth mass extinction of species and the rapid warming of our climate by the burning of fossil fuels. The struggles to move toward a transformation to a sustainable society is an existential one, a struggle for the soul of our living earth, as well as a struggle for the soul of humanity. One of the front lines in this historical struggle involves a decades-long effort by the Gwich'in Steering Committee, a coalition of the Gwich'in people to save the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, one of America's last great wildernesses, from the depredations of oil and gas operations, as well as preservation of the integrity of the Gwich'in people. Today, Echo Radio was privileged to have as our guest Bernadette Dementev, Executive Director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee, who will share with us some of the history of the struggles of the Gwich'in, as well as update us on very recent events related to the ongoing struggle to save America's last great wilderness. Bernadette, we deeply appreciate you taking time from your very busy schedule to be on Echo Radio today, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. My name is Bernadette Dementev. I'm from Fort Yukon, which is 8 miles above the Arctic Circle. And I'm the executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee, which was founded in 1988 by the elders and chiefs of the Gwich'in Nation of Alaska and Canada. And it was founded because Sarah Abel, you know, we had people coming into our homelands telling us we were going to be rich if we drill in the Arctic refuge in the Kelvin grounds. So she called on the first gathering that was held in over 150 years. And all the chiefs and council were gathered in Arctic Village. And that's when they came up with the Gwich'in Steering Committee. And our mission is to protect the Kelvin grounds and the Porcupine Caribou herd, which protects our way of life.
Yeah, the Kelvin grounds you refer to are on the coastal plain of the refuge. Is that correct?
That is correct. To my people, it's called Ezikwatsan Gondaigotlit, the sacred place where life begins. But a lot of people call it, Arctic Refuge, Coastal Plain, Anwar. That Anwar, that's just a four-letter word that just doesn't give the real beauty. You know, it sounds like a foreign word or country. And this area is such a majestic, beautiful place. But we don't step foot there. We do not go there. That is where the caribou go give birth. And so, still to this day, we do not go there.
The existence of the caribou herd is sacred to the Gwich'in. Can you talk a little bit more about the sacredness of that connection?
Well, our creation story tells us that there was a time we were able to communicate with the caribou. And we made a vow to each other that we would take care of each other. And so therefore, We used to migrate with them for over 40,000 years. We migrated. And there's a map on our arcticrefuge.org. If you go there, you'll see a map. And you'll, if you look, you'll see the migratory route of the caribou. And then you'll see the Gwich'in communities. They're nearly identical. And our ancestors settled us on the migratory route so that we can continue to live and thrive off the caribou. But because climate change has been impacting Alaska so drastically, many of our communities don't get it any longer.
What led you to the Gwich'in Steering Committee and to the position of executive director, which you now hold?
We're raised to protect the, as a Gwich'in people, we're raised to protect the Arctic Refuge, the Calvin Grounds. It's always been an issue. So, you know, we grow up, I don't ever remember anybody sitting me down saying, the Arctic Refuge is sacred to us, protect it. I just always knew it in my heart, and I don't remember how, I just knew. I worked for the Gwich'in Steering Committee in 2005 and 2006. And then my brother committed suicide and I left the job. And then I came back in 2011 again. And then I came back, I left, and then I came back in 2014. During this time is when I went up to a mountain called Deshenlai. It's a mountain my ancestors used to migrate through. And when I was there, I just felt like a ton of bricks on my chest. I could close my eyes and I could just see it now, like all the mountains, the trees, the lakes. Oh, it's beautiful. And I just understood why my ancestors returned every year. And from then on, I asked Creator for forgiveness for being disconnected for so long, and that I'm here now to share my responsibility as a Gwich'in. And I just, from that moment forward, I just started speaking from my heart. I started praying. I'm not a religious person, but I'm very spiritual. And so I always ask Creator to use me, you know, give me the words to say. And that's just how it goes. I'm not giving up. You know, they may think they're going into our sacred lands, but it ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm. That's a very touching story. I really appreciate you sharing that. How has the global warming affected Alaska? Can you give just a real brief summary of how global warming is affecting Alaska?
Absolutely. We have seasonal hunters that know the land like the back of their hand, falling through ice during a time that they're supposed to be frozen. We have dead birds literally falling out of the sky from starvation, 33 coastal communities eroding. And 2 years ago, we had thousands and thousands of dead fish in our rivers and our lakes. So much to the fact that a 9-year-old boy went to a city council meeting and he was sad because he said he couldn't swim because there was too much dead fish in the lakes. We have record-breaking fires. I couldn't even walk out of my house for 3 days. It's and I'm ashamed of my Alaska's delegation, because they're pushing forward for development while all this is happening. You're putting profit before people.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what's going on, and I think in our next segment we'll explore that issue. So, but for now, we'll take a short break and come right back. So, and we're in the process of talking with Bernadette Dementeff, who's the executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee. We'll be right back.
KKFI would like to ask you to join a group of volunteer listeners who are interested in helping us achieve our goal of constantly improving the quality of the KKFI listening experience. Please join our team of community program evaluators who will assist in our program evaluation process. An online training session will be required, and team members will be expected to evaluate an assigned show every 2 to 3 months or so. If you think you might be interested in volunteering in this way, please go to www.kkfi.org/volunteer and look for current opportunities, or call us at 816-931-3122 and ask to speak with the station manager.
This is Nature Note with Angela Gibbons of Earthwalk Vermont.
Today I'm feeling thankful for all the little mammals that travel and live under the snow all winter. Mice, voles, moles, and shrews are all tiny little fur balls ranging from 2 to 4 inches long. Yet they stay active through the coldest months of the year. How does a little critter, so small, survive during the winter? The snow keeps them warm. Under 8 inches or more of snow, the temperature can hover around 32 degrees Fahrenheit, regardless of the temperature and weather conditions above the snow. So for most of the winter, these little mammals live underneath the snow for protection from the cold as well as hungry predators. The area between the surface of the ground and the bottom of the snowpack is called the subnivian world. The word subnivian comes from the Latin sub, under, and nives, snow. In the subnivian world, these small animals create an intricate tunnel system with air shafts to the surface above. These little mammals need to keep their tiny little bodies moving and eating almost continuously to survive. They eat grass, leaves, bark, seeds, and insects, all of which are unfrozen and abundant. Next time you are out for a walk, snowshoe, or ski, look for the stories of an active subnivian world. Maybe you will find small tracks across the snow leading to a little hole. Or you can just take a moment to imagine the amazing life underneath the snow.
Nature Note comes to you weekly from earthwalkvermont.org and Goddard College Community Radio.
Okay, now we're back from our break, and we're talking with Bernadette Dementeff, who's the executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee, and they have been struggling to save the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge from depredations from oil and gas drilling. My understanding is that there have been, I know on your website, you have some information about the long-lasting damages of the Exxon Valdez oil spill on the Alaska coastline. Could you talk about that a little bit?
What would you like to know?
I know that on your website it says that it's been 16 years since the Exxon Valdez oil spill, and could you just sort of talk about how there still is ongoing ecological damage, even 16 years later?
Oh, yeah. You go down there and you can still see oil on rocks. I mean, there's never a way that you can clean oil spills up. There's no such thing as responsible drilling. And my aunt was one of the ones who actually had to go down and clean birds scrubbing them. And, you know, from then on forward, from that time forward, the Alaska delegation should have started looking into the renewable energy, because if there's an oil spill that happens like that up there in such a remote area, there is no way we'll ever be able to clean that up.
Mm-hmm.
There are no roads.
My understanding is that the climate up there is really quite severe, and I on Wikipedia I looked up your home village and at least from 1915 to 1990, the average temperature in January for a high was minus 11 degrees Fahrenheit, and for a low it was minus 28 degrees Fahrenheit. So I don't know if it's quite that extreme now, but you know, that's very extreme conditions up there. So yeah, any spills, catastrophes can never be cleaned up.
You know, February is usually our coldest year, and 2 years ago it was 77 above here. And that is completely insane.
In February 2 years ago?
Two or 3 years ago, it was like 77 above in Fairbanks, Alaska in February.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, we had our very first Arctic Indigenous Climate Summit report released. It's on our website also, and one of our very respected elders, Stephen Frost from Old Crow Yukon Territory, Canada. He was 87 years old, and he came all the way to Fort Yukon on boat from Old Crow, Canada, to tell us, you know what, enough with the meetings, enough with the talk. It's time to get active. And I didn't understand, like, you know, our direction that our elders gave us in 88 is to go out and tell the world we're here, to do it in a good way, and don't compromise our position. So how do we do that without, you know, he said get active. And being active is also using our voice, because our voice is one of the most powerful tools that we have. And I really truly believe that I am on the right side of history. I believe that that we're going to answer for the way we treat Mother Earth. It's, this is a beautiful, you know, Creator blessed us with a beautiful gift, and it's being ripped apart. And this is one of the last untouched ecosystems in the world. And I think it should remain untouched, not just, you know, this, I don't use my voice. I don't speak just for myself. I speak for my grandchildren. I speak for my future generations. I speak for your future generations. This is, what happens in the Arctic will happen where you're at. We are no longer thawing twice the rate. We are thawing three times the rate as the rest of the world.
Yeah, I've read that, and I couldn't resonate with you more than I strongly resonate with your talk about the Earth and the fact that it needs to be preserved. And I mean, it's an absolute necessity to preserve it, and you and all organizations that are working in this effort, you know, we are on the right side of history. You know, there's no question about that. And I think there's a lot of change going on as we speak, and a lot more change needs to happen. I think the real problem, though, is that there is this worldview that allows fossil fuel corporations to go anywhere they want to, for profit. And, you know, I think, you want to talk a little bit about, my understanding is that the the Republican tax cut bill in 2017 allowed for the lease sales on the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and that those lease sales happened on January 6th of this year, ironically enough. Do you want to kind of talk about all that, kind of what led up to it and kind of what's going on now?
It, sure. Well, we knew it was coming, but I didn't think it was going to be that big of a failure. You know, Alaska Corporation bought the lease sale because there was no interest in it because of the work we have been doing for the last... when Trump became in office, we knew that there was no way that we get through to him. So we just totally left Congress out, and we started focusing elsewhere, cutting their legs off. So we went to oil and gas shareholder meetings. I went to banks. It took about 2 years. And then we also went back to the House to restore protection for the coastal plain, and that passed. And then after we got the banks, we started in on the insurance companies, and I believe three of them will not insure Arctic Refuge development as of today.
Well, as of today, January 21st, the recording of this interview?
I'm pretty sure my emails, it's been a crazy couple of days, but I believe there's three.
Well, that's amazing news to hear. On the January 6th lease sales, why do you think there was such a lack of interest on the part of fossil fuel corporations to bid on those on that auction? Why do you think that was?
Well, I think because we spoke with them. You know, we made connections to people. I told some of them, like 73% of Americans oppose development in the Arctic Refuge. Do you really think that your organization is going to recover from the backlash that's going to happen? Because the backlash will happen. And that we also told them that, you know, it's a waste of money. Do you really want to put your money into that? Look at how fast Alaska is thawing. I mean, we just gave them the facts. We shared the truth. We also explained the difference between a corporation and a tribe, because I was born into a corporation. The corporation don't speak for me. The corporation don't hold my values. They're for profit. They're just another corporation with Native in front of it. And so this is not, you know, they want to say this is a Nupiaq versus Gwich'in issue, when in fact it's a corporation versus tribe issue.
I'm a little confused when you say you were born into a corporation.
Yes.
I'm a little bit confused by that.
Well, when I was born, I just automatically got shares into this corporation.
What corporation is that?
Doyon.
And did so all the Gwich'in have shares in this corporation? What kind of corporation is it?
So, you know, the government wanted to do things differently because of the treaties of down in the States. So they came up with there's 12 regional corporations, and the corporations own subsurface rights, and the tribes own, it's very confusing for me too, but It's a big headache to think about it.
I'll tell you what, we're going to go to break here pretty soon, but I would like to explore in our next segment the reactions of some of these fossil fuel corporate executives to your meeting with them. I think we're going to go ahead and take a break now, and we'll be back in a few minutes here. And we are in the process of talking with Bernadette Dementa from the Gwich'in Steering Committee, and she is the executive director, and they are seeking to save the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. We'll be back in just a little bit.
Every Tuesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m., Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced public affairs program, spotlights individuals and organizations in our community that deal with ideas and issues of social and political significance, such as climate change, racial and gender inequality, pay inequity, and much, much more. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesdays, 6 to 6:30 p.m., right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Thanks for tuning in to KKFI. Well, folks, the future's here. Simply tell your smart speaker, play KKFI. If you haven't already, give it a shot. KKFI, wherever you are.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarus, and this is Climate Connections. In 2006, Matt Grokoff bought a century-old house in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It had a south-facing roof, big windows, and heart pine floors.
It was our dream house.
But it lacked insulation. The windows leaked, and a 50-year-old furnace chugged away all winter long.
We had to put buckwheat pillows heated up in the microwave and stuff down at the bottom of the bed to stay warm at night. And then we would get the utility bill, and it was like $350 a month.
Grokoff was determined to reduce energy waste and cut carbon pollution. He installed a geothermal heating and cooling system and rooftop solar panels, and he replaced appliances, added insulation, and installed storm windows, all while preserving the home's original character and meeting historic preservation standards. In 2015, the International Living Future Institute certified Grokoff's home as net zero energy, meaning it produces as much energy as it uses. It's the oldest house in the country to earn that certification.
And we're looking forward to giving up that crown.
Because he says to limit climate change, it's necessary to cut carbon pollution from all homes, including the ones that have been around for generations. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Welcome back from the break on Echo Radio. We are talking here with Bernadette Dementeff, the executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee. Bernadette, let's get back to the January 6th lease sales that happened up there that sold some tracts on the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And my understanding is that most of the tracts were sold to the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, which I understand to be a state entity.
Conflict of interest?
Could you talk about them a little bit?
Sure. I think it's illegal. I think, we actually had a meeting with them. There was a reporter that was talking with me, and he asked me if I had any questions for the guy he was going to meet with later that night. And my question was, I have two. One is, has he connected with the indigenous people that occupies these lands? And two, what is a company like his doing bidding on oil leases? And the reporter went and told him that I wanted to meet with him. And he told him, he told me he wanted to meet with me. So I don't know how, but we ended up having a meeting, and one of my good friends, fellow leader, Sam Alexander, he actually sat in the meeting with me, Well, we did it like Zoom, and you know, he was basically saying, this is what we're doing. We're making a connection with the indigenous people. But see, you have to understand that Alaska has 227 federally recognized tribes. You know, there's a lot of different natives. There's not just Gwich'in. This is not just a Gwich'in issue. There are many different indigenous people up here that are going to be impacted. It's not up to just us. You have to include everybody who occupied these lands for thousands of years. This is our home. The destruction that these people want to cause is going to be what we have to live in, what our children are going to have to live in. And so for him to falsely claim that, oh, we got responsible development, responsible drilling, look at Red Dog Mine. When in fact, in 2016, Red Dog Mine, I believe, let out 576 million tons of toxic chemicals. How is that responsible drilling development? Or, you know, we are already rich in our culture, in our way of life, and we're not asking for anything. We're not asking for jobs or money, or we're simply asking to live and thrive off of the lands that Creator blessed us with.
The Gwich'in should be allowed to live and thrive as they always have. And, you know, it's all about valuing diversity, not only in nature, but diversity, you know, among all human groups, and that all these need to be valued extremely. You know, let's get back to, so the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, is that a new enterprise, or has that been around for a long time, or?
It's been around for a while. They are actually trying to make a road through somebody else's homelands who don't want it. Mm-hmm. So we're just basically having people come up here, you know, coming into our homelands and making decisions about our future and not involving us. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit frustrating.
But yeah, so they are a state-owned entity. Are they a corporation?
I believe they're a state corporation.
I have not heard of that before. But they are the ones that bought most of the tracts in the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And my understanding is that they only paid, was it $25 an acre?
Was it? 26 something? Six. Something like that. Okay. I don't know. It's so, not worth it.
Well, you know, almost nothing for, and this is all for profit, to aim for the drilling of oil and gas in one of America's last great wildernesses. And there is worldwide, there is an oil glut going on right now. And the world is moving from a fossil fuel economy to a lot of renewable energy. So, you know, the definition of insanity that I referred to earlier is the fact that these fossil fuel corporations keep doing what they do because they really don't know to do anything else except continue their operations. And these corporations need to be brought to heel. You know, you cannot have a corporation seek to endlessly extend their operations, which are oil and gas drilling, especially in a wilderness as fragile as the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. You know, we really are dealing with a clash of two worldviews here. I know that the Biden administration just yesterday, January 20, he signed an executive order putting moratorium on the implementation of these lease sales. Do you have any further information about that?
Yeah, I had to hold that in for a whole day. you know, Biden has made a commitment to do what he needs to do to protect the Calvin grounds. Everybody has a different reason. Ours is because it's sacred land to us. It is like me bulldozing your church. You know, that's what it feels like for us. And right now, we have pregnant caribou on their way to the coastal plain. They're the last land mammals on the planet that travel that distance. And they will go up there where they will have up to 40,000 calves in a 2-week period. And I do not want them to go up there with 90,000 pound vehicles, cigarette butts, men and people and trash. I will fight every step of the way to make sure that doesn't happen.
Well, I can see that you're real emotional about that. There does seem to be hope on the horizon, though. I think the Secretary of the Interior is an indigenous woman. I think her name is Deb Haaland.
Haaland.
And I assume that gives you some degree of hope that things will be better.
I never lose hope. I never lose hope. When it comes down to it, it doesn't matter. Creator is in charge. Mm-hmm. If there's going to be development, it's going to be on his terms. But, you know, our prophecy, our elders tell us things that's been passed down from generation to generation, and we see it now. And sometimes I get really shocked because it's happening. And then I think about, you know, what's still to come, and it worries me because I have 6 grandchildren, and it's scary. So
what does the Gwich'in prophecy, you want to share anything about the Gwich'in prophecy?
Well, I think that stays within our tribal, because, you know, everybody has their own, although we're Gwich'in, you know, there's different prophecies. It's just about food. Well, we're going to have food shortage again, that we need to continue to live off of our land. Do not forget where we come from. A lot of us have done that. I myself. Colonization happens in different ways, and I am proof of that. But I am finding my identity again as a Gwich'in. I go out hunting, I go fishing. That's a part of our life. It may be harder, but it's a life that we want. The food, it nourishes us. When I travel, one time I was away for 3 weeks and I came home and I was just drained, and my husband made me caribou soup, and I had one bowl of soup and I just felt my body. I mean, I thought it was in my head at first, you know, and then when I travel more and more and I come back, and he'd always have something traditional. Even though I live in this, like a rural city or whatever you want to call it, like 90% of the food is comes from my land, comes from our land.
The Gwich'in Steering Committee is located in Fairbanks, Alaska. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And, And your home village is north of the Arctic Circle. How far away are you from your Gwich'in land?
That is our Gwich'in land. So it spans out through the whole, between Alaska and Canada. So they kind of like stick the Canadian, American border in the middle of our homelands. So half of us are Canadian, half of us are American, but we respect that border, but we don't recognize it. Mm-hmm. We are one people.
We're talking about a really fairly large area here. Well, my understanding is as far as President Biden's executive order goes, is that I think he's calling for a review of this whole oil lease sale program, and I think he's going to be calling for a more thorough environmental review. So that's all good news, and you know we're extremely fortunate to have the Biden administration come in and roll back some of the fossil fuel friendly Trump administration efforts. Do you have any messages for the Canadian and American environmental movements in terms of what's important, and also how can environmentalists down here in the lower 48 support you in your cause?
So, well, you know, as we can see, climate change don't care what color you are, don't care if you're rich or poor, red, black, white. We are all going to be negatively impacted. And it's time that we stick our differences aside and start preparing our future generations for what's to come. And you can share our story. Go to our arcticrefuge.org. And, you know, we're strong believers in power of prayer. Keep us in prayer, because we ain't giving up. Giving up is not an option for us. And, you know, we're not activists. We're not environmentalists. I'm a mother. I didn't come looking for this fight. This fight came to my front door. So it's just us defending our children's birthright.
We are, all of us are with you in spirit.
Thank you.
Okay.
Support for KKFI by the law firm of Baldwin and Vernon, dedicated to protecting the rights of those facing discrimination or harassment in the workplace and defending the rights of those facing criminal charges. Their team of criminal law and employment lawyers have served the Kansas City area since 2007. Learn more at baldwinvernon.com.
More people commit suicide than are killed by soldiers, terrorists, and criminals combined. If you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of suicide, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255. This is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Here's the calendar of events for the week of January 25th. You can view migrating bald eagles in Missouri at state parks, lakes, and wildlife refuge areas. You can find great viewing from late December through February at Smithville Lake north of Kansas City and Lois Bluffs National Wildlife Refuge south of Mound City, Missouri. More info at mdc.mo.gov, or in Kansas, see travelks.com. Paddle Missouri 2021 trip registration is open. Find out more at paddlemo.org. Registration also opens for MR340, a boat race across Missouri. See info at rivermiles.com. Tuesday, January 26th at 12 noon, the Kansas Legislative Update with Zach Pistora is organized by the Wakarusa Group of the Kansas Sierra Club. This is on Zoom, phone, 785-840-7282 for access information. Wednesday, January 27th, 6:30 p.m., a book discussion on the hidden life of trees is organized by Thomas Hart Benton Group of the Sierra Club. Contact Klaus Warinsky by calling 816-517-5244 for access info. Beginning Thursday, January 28th through Saturday, January 30, 9 a.m. to 12:30 noon each day, the 12th Annual Agroforestry Symposium Community Health and Resilient Food Systems is a no-charge virtual gathering with engaging webinars. More info at cultivatekc.org. Thursday, January 28th, Green New Deal Training, 3:30 to 5 p.m. This is an online event, the fourth session of a four-week training to learn about the Green New Deal. Access info at Sunrise Movement Lawrence on Facebook. Thursday, January 28th, 6 p.m., for a virtual online stream advocacy workshop that includes an overview of recent Missouri legislation affecting clean water and resilience initiative, an advocacy for the Mississippi River, and an explanation of the differences in laws, rules, and regulations, register at streamteamsunited.org. Sunday, January 31st, 9 a.m., Earth Care Forum Series 2021 will be on the history and future of refrigerants and common research, including recycling, repurposing of refrigerants. This is an online event. The presenter is Mark Shiflett, Ph.D. at the University of Kansas Chemical and Petroleum Engineering. It's hosted by the First Presbyterian Church Lawrence. The Zoom link is on our Facebook page. Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. These items and more can be viewed at the Eco Radio KC Facebook page. Thanks to our engineer, Keith Washburn. We hope you stay tuned now for Fiesta Musical.
Trump leaves a surprising gift to the planet on his way out. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
President Joe Biden wasted no time in moving to undo actions of his predecessor that he said failed to protect public health and the environment.
On his first day, Biden took steps to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord and revoke the permit for the controversial Keystone XL pipeline.
Biden ordered a sweeping review of more than 100 rules and regulations on water, air, public lands, endangered species, and global warming that were rolled back by the previous administration.
The new president withdrew areas in the Arctic and Bering Sea from oil and gas drilling and ordered a proper assessment of development proposals. He will require that all federal projects factor in their impacts on climate change.
The Biden administration announced Thursday the suspension of new oil and gas leasing and drilling permits for U.S. lands and waters effective for 60 days.
The administration will listen to science and hold polluters accountable, including those who disproportionately harm low-income communities and people of color.
In his first months, the president is expected to restore federal protections around at least two national monuments in Utah, Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante, which Trump had opened to mining, logging, and drilling.
Biden is focused on restoring Obama-era environmental policies and in some cases going further. For example, efficiency standards for appliances will be reinstated, and his administration will work with automakers to improve vehicle fuel economy.
The New York Times reports it could take 2 to 3 years or even longer to put many of the new rules into place.
A day before Trump left office, his administration made a surprising gift to renewable energy. They green-lighted a project that generates power from ocean waves.
The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management announced that Oregon State University will operate PacWave South, the first ever test site in the U.S. that will deploy marine hydrokinetic technology to harness energy from ocean waves, tides, and currents and convert it into electricity.
The site off the coast of Newport, Oregon, will include four mooring berths to capture wave energy both above and below the surface and transfer the power to the grid onshore.
At maximum capacity, the project could generate enough power for 20,000 homes. According to the Energy Information Administration, waves off the coast of the U.S. could supply two-thirds of all the electricity the country produced in 2019.
Tens of thousands of dams across the world are reaching the limit of their lifespans, according to a new study from the United Nations University. They warn that many will need maintenance and some will need to be decommissioned to avoid overtopping, leaks, and even failures.
Many dams were designed to be in service for only 50 to 100 years, yet thousands are older. Also, the majority were built before the impacts from global warming, such as extreme weather and changing rainfall patterns, were known.
Intense storms can cause upstream erosion and send large amounts of sand and silt into reservoirs, not only reducing their capacity to store water during droughts, but increasing the risk of flooding.
The Guardian reports that dam failures risk the lives of people living downstream, but a more likely threat is the loss of electricity generation from hydropower, especially if the infrastructure is not maintained to cope with climate change.
As of last year, more than 85% of large dams in the U.S. were operating at or beyond their life expectancy, and according to the report, the estimated cost of refurbishing them is about $64 billion.
Colombian drug trafficker Pablo Escobar, once the seventh richest person in the world, lived large off his cocaine empire, collecting luxury cars, planes, and even submarines.
But his favorite thing to acquire was animals for his private zoo, including four hippos that he kept at his estate outside of Medellin.
When he was shot dead in 1993, the Colombian government seized his property and most of the animals were either euthanized or sent to zoos.
But four of the hippos escaped and have since become a herd of nearly 100, which is causing so much damage to the environment, scientists are calling them the largest invasive species in the world.
A new study out this month says the hippo population could swell and unleash irreversible ecological damage through their urine, which is toxic to wildlife, and feces, which fuel algal blooms in the water used for drinking and agriculture. Also, as the animals wallow in waterways, they're altering bird and fish habitat.
Hippos are also very aggressive. So to prevent an ecological catastrophe and protect the public, the researchers are urging officials to consider culling them.
Easier said than done, previous efforts to reduce the herd have been met with firm resistance by locals who see the animals as unofficial mascots and sell hippo jewelry and t-shirts.
Sterilizing the hippos has proven to be difficult and ineffective. So for now, the best strategy is to try to convince the public of the urgency of dealing with the invaders before it's too late.
And this final note on the way out, there's some good news about marine ecosystems. Populations of harbor porpoises have dramatically rebounded in Northern California as a result of the state banning the use of gill nets in the 1990s.
Porpoises are smaller and shyer than their cousins, the dolphins, and according to new research from NOAA, their return to the California coast is the first documented example of the species rebounding and suggests that eliminating nets can allow other marine mammals to recover too.
Harbor porpoises were particularly vulnerable to nets along the California coast meant to catch white sea bass and halibut because they frequent the same shallow waters.
Since the ban on gill nets, the porpoise populations have doubled from Morro Bay to the Sonoma coast, and the findings suggest that the nets had taken a greater toll on the marine mammals than was previously realized.
That's it for this week in water. We'll catch you next time.
Radio is produced by a team of collaborators, including yours truly, Craig Lubo, Teresa Wilkie, Dave Bennett, and Brent Ragsdale. Thanks to Ryan Porky. for our theme music. I'm Richard Mabian, reminding you to give your feedback by contacting us at ecoradio@gmail.com or reaching out to Eco Radio KC, our Facebook page.